Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Monday morning. That means my dad will call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. Yesterday was Mother's Day. So we are going to talk about the best, the worst, the weirdest TV moms and movie moms and talk a little bit about that in honor of Mother's Day. So that's all coming up. Stay tuned right here. 312-981-7200 is the call for text and talk. And it is Monday, which means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every week to review all the new movies, and they were just coming off of their the week spent at the Music Box for the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which I understand went very, very well. And we're going to talk with Eric and Colin about that, review all the new movies, and then Eric and I will talk about the box office results for the weekend. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and let's get the guys on and get this started. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Eric, let's start with a wrap-up of the Chicago Critics Film Festival. I understand it went very well.
Yeah. Once again, it was our biggest year to date. We closed out the week with an amazing evening with Bo Burnham there for a Chicago premiere of Eighth Grade. We pretty much literally packed the house. If there was an empty seat in the Music Box, I couldn't find it. The people had a really great time with that one, and it was just a tremendous week. The walk-up traffic at the Music Box, we had some really nice weather, hopefully, I guess, contributed to that. We had a great evening Monday night with Paul Schrader, mm-hmm. Where we screened First Reformed, a pretty terrific film, if I do say so. And we had another huge house for that, the Jurassic Park event on Sunday was great. A lot of families came to that, and it was just a pretty amazing week. Colin and I are certainly very tired from it, but as we all are. But it was a very rewarding experience. And this later today, we will be announcing our audience award winners as well.
Okay. All right, so that's later on today. You'll find that. Well, congratulations, and Colin, tell me about how your shorts programs went. I understand they went very well.
Very well, the best we've ever had. I got to say, probably my favorite lineup of movies that I've ever had, and we had the biggest audience for a shorts program we've ever had. In fact, I think our shorts program made the top five of highest, what, earners or highest attended? I don't know.
Highest ticket sales.
Wow.
Highest ticket sales.
Yeah.
For a shorts program, that's unheard of for us. And probably for a lot of festivals, that's probably not very true. But, I mean, it helps that I had a lot of local talent represented and who really got the word out to their friends and families who all showed up. And then there were people who were there for the World of Tomorrow movies. The Don Hertzfeld, now that he made a sequel, people were curious about that. So it was just one of those, shorts lineups that I always dreamed about, that I've been dreaming about having since we started this thing. And Monday did okay, too. So I'm excited about that. And, the whole festival, as it is every year, I hate to brag so much, but I think we're getting better and better all the time. So, we had a great year.
Very cool. Very, very cool. What were some of the, for you, Eric, what were some of the film highlights for you?
Well, I mentioned First Reformed, which I hadn't seen up to the festival, so I got to watch that before Schrader even got to the theater, and it is quite an experience. It really is his best work in some time. Real challenging film. Ethan Hawke giving one of his best performances, I think. We'll be talking about that just in a few weeks, obviously. And also the Bodied, which I finally got to caught up with after at a couple festivals where it had won like audience awards at a couple festivals, and the experience of seeing that, this a rap battle is not exactly my thing, But experiencing that thing and what it's trying to say about the sort of current woke culture that we're living through right now, watching that with an audience who were all sort of got into what the thing was trying to say, the energy of it, the horror of it at some points, and obviously how funny it is, really just was kind of an engulfing experience. And those are certainly two of my favorites. And the Jurassic Park experience was always great to see. A pretty flawless 35mm print we had, and watching an audience experience that at any point is always fun for me.
Yeah, it's interesting to see you said people brought their kids and stuff, and the kids who were brought to see that movie probably only saw Jurassic World in the big, you know.
Yeah,
their
parents were kids when they saw Jurassic Park. Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing that the thing's 25 years old, and just a whole nother generation coming down to see that original for the first time, probably.
Yeah. Colin, what are some of the highlights for you?
Starting with opening night, we had a great movie called Fast Color, and it was a pleasure to meet Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who's an actress I've been praising all these years, and she's just a lovely and incredibly talented person. A lot of these movies I saw on a screener, and it's just not the same as watching it in the theater. And I definitely had that experience when I popped my head into a documentary we had called Abducted in Plain Sight, it's this unbelievable story about this guy who's, you know, friends with his family, but he's got his eye on this 12-year-old girl, and he's just kind of friends with her, and then not, you know, then just like taking it to a whole other disgusting level.
Yeah, Jim reviewed this one last week. He loved it.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a great movie. And then popping my head in to listen to the audience watch it, and just hearing them gasp and go, "What? Oh my God!" Just again, every twist and turn was a real treat. One of the best thing that happened as far as, you know, stuff with our guests, I think, happened at the very end. We had Bo Burnham, the writer and director of Eighth Grade, which is a great coming of age movie we'll review later in the summer. There was an actual eighth grader in the audience in line to ask a question at our Q&A. We also have a microphone in the aisle so people can line up and ask questions. And they were just about to wrap up, and somebody said, "Hey, we have an eighth grader here." And Bo Burnham invited the eighth grader up on stage, and he sat down next to him, just like on the actual stage, not on a chair.
Yeah.
And just had this nice little heart-to-heart talk with him. The kid had a question about the movie. But it was just this like perfectly beautiful moment that ended the Q&A and ended the festival. And I think our audience was just like, I think they may have felt that moment was worth the price of admission itself. So that to me was an all time Chicago Critics Film Festival highlight. So,
well, that's great. Well, it sounds like you guys had a great time and a big turnout and all of that stuff. And you guys you'll do it again all next year.
That's the plan.
Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the winners, you said the audience winners will be announced later today.
Yeah, for a feature film, documentary, and both of Colin Short's programs as well. We'll be having a press release later today.
Okay. All right. People look out for that. And if you guys, you know, I know there's a lot of social network of posting of pictures and all kinds of cool stuff with Q&As. Looks like you guys had a great time. And, of course, the Music Box is, the people over at the Music Box are fantastic. And it's a beautiful theater, so...
And the Q&As are slowly trickling out on YouTube because I filmed them all and I'm editing them all right now. And, I think we'll have about five of them done by the end of the day today, okay, including the eighth grade one that I talked about.
Okay. All right. There you go. All right. Well, that's the Chicago Critics Film Festival. And congratulations to you guys again on a successful fest and a successful week. And let's jump right into... into the movies, then. Colin, you actually did see Breaking In.
Yes, I did.
All right, tell everybody about Breaking In.
All right, well, this stars Gabrielle Union as a mother of two kids, a preteen boy and a teenage girl, who's very rich father has just died, and now she wants to sell his very large house. And she and the two kids head out to his estate with the intent of fixing it up before selling it. There's a dad, too, but he's busy with work and, you know, can't join them. Well, her dad is a pretty high-profile guy, and a group of thieves and thugs head out to that estate that same weekend to steal $4 million from the safe that they believe is hidden somewhere in that house. They break into the house, not expecting there to be actual, you know, they're not expecting to be people there. Of course, they have to tie up the kids, and the mom, at this point, is not in the house. She's locked out. You know, this is a home invasion thriller that's also a you know, kind of cat and mouse thriller with security cameras and drone cameras and every other plot convenience you can think of.
Okay, hang on, Colin. We're going to take a break.
Okay.
Okay, hang on a second, and we'll get more details about the movie Breaking In, and we'll find out what Colin thought of it as well. We got to take a break here for the news. When we come back, more the Monday Morning Movie Reviews right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here till 5. We're going to talk about, yesterday was Mother's Day, so we're going to talk about the best, worst, and weirdest TV and movie moms. So we'd love to jump in on that conversation, 312-981-7200. Monday morning, that means my dad is going to call in and tell a joke. It's a jokey, jokey time. And right now, we are doing the movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. We just talked a little bit about the Chicago Critics Film Festival that just ended up its very, very successful run. The announcement of the Audience Award winners will be happening a little bit later on today. And that's all coming up. And we're in the middle of reviewing movies. And Eric, welcome back.
Hello.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, before the news, Colin told us a little bit about Breaking In. Continue to tell us about this latest one, Breaking In.
Yeah, so like I said, it's your standard cat and mouse, or you know, and home invasion thriller. When I saw it yesterday, Saturday, I had a very busy day. I was running a ton of errands, just catching up on all the stuff that I hadn't done because of the festival had taken over my life, and that's kind of like this movie just felt like I was running another errand. It didn't feel like I was going to a movie at all. It felt like I was just stopping somewhere, getting something done, and leaving, and not really taking anything meaningful from it, of course. I don't expect, any great meaning from something like this. But, it's just like there was no experience to be had here. It is a pretty boring, pretty standard, pretty stale affair. This is like, we're going to talk about a movie that is kind of like, this kind of thing in a bit. And this is like the scared studio executive version of another movie that we're going to talk about, where it's just one woman against three guys and she's going to slowly take them all out, to rescue her kids. The way the movie sets up everything, it's kind of like, they're just checking the list off of every plot convenience that is going to come back later, and you just don't have the sense of anything is at risk, and you just kind of go, that's going to come back later, and that'll save the day. Okay, they got that going for them. Good, that'll help them later on. And it's pretty much, goes through the motions of getting those plot conveniences out of the way. The villains here are pretty standard, pretty stale. There's not really anything here. You got the weak one, you got the psychotic one, and you got the cunning, charismatic one. We've seen this 100 times before, but we could. Still do it well if there's the right writer and director behind it. But this is a movie directed by James McTeague, who had a promising start many years ago with V for Vendetta, and has pretty much coasted on nothing memorable ever since. And this is exactly that. This is nothing memorable, nothing to write home about. There's really nothing. I can't really say, well, at least this was good. I don't know. Gabriel Union, she's very attractive, I guess. That's about all I can give for this one. But it pretty much, you know, is by the numbers stuff. And so, obviously, I'm not recommending it.
Okay. It's obvious to me at this point in this guy's career that the Wachowskis directed V for Vendetta. That's...
Yeah, that's pretty much. Pretty much. He showed up. He turned on the camera.
Yeah. So, you know, I also would like to mention that this should not be confused with the Burt Reynolds Casey Shemasko film.
Exactly.
Which is a wonderful movie, by the way, if people have not seen it.
Did Bill Forsyth? Yes, that's Bill Forsyth.
It's a wonderful movie and should have been like one of those one of those many comebacks for Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
There was that period of time when he kept doing a movie that was supposed to be his comeback, and that was kind of one of them.
Another one on the horizon.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah, that's a breaking in. That's so Colin, nothing very memorable about that. Okay. All right. Eric, but by the way, I do want to mention Ghost Stories open this week, and I reviewed that a few weeks ago on VOD. A very, very creepy, wonderful tribute to the old Amicus British anthology horror movies with three separate stories and a connecting element about a skeptical guy who debunks ghosts and frauds and things like that. And it's a really creepy, wonderful, scary movie called Ghost Stories. We reviewed it. I reviewed it a couple of weeks ago. It's out now as well. And I highly recommend it. It's a wonderful, creepy movie that brought back my childhood, you know, right to my face. It was unbelievable. So I also want to mention, speaking of older movies, you guys were busy over the past week. Zemeckis Fest, we kicked it off Tuesday. We had a really big crowd for Used Cars, and I was thrilled. And it was a 4K, you know, restored print. And, you know, the last 15 minutes with the chase across the desert,
mm-hmm.
It looked so good, and it sounded so good, and it was, and of course the movie's unbelievably funny, and I mean the theater was roaring, people were just on the floor. I don't know if I've ever seen my dad laugh harder, and I remember sitting in the theater with him, seeing it when it first came out with both my parents, and I remember. We saw it at the Lincoln Village, and it came out in July of 1980. And the movie didn't really have a chance because it came out. They screwed up the release. Columbia Pictures screwed up the release. They had a very successful sneak preview of it, and it scored through the roof. And then Columbia was like, "Oh, let's release it now," you know, a week after Airplane. So
yeah,
and it never, you know, it never had a chance, and it, which is unfortunate because it's a brilliant and it's a hilarious movie. But yeah, I mean, I remember seeing it at the Lincoln Village, and that scene where Jack Warden has the heart attack, $50 never killed anybody. I remember the first time we saw it, my dad and I, we were on the floor laughing during that whole thing. And then and history repeated itself Tuesday night when that scene came on. We were all falling apart. My favorite detail of that scene, where Warden comes in and has a heart attack, is he's dying. He's having a heart attack.
Yep.
He's dying. He's having a heart attack, and yet he takes the money from the guy.
Yeah, yep.
It's the best moment in the entire... It's one of the best moments in the entire movie. Anyway, it was great to see that on the big screen, and we're doing Back to the Future on June 12th. Mike Kurz, who works with me on these, he's going to be out of town the first Tuesday in June, so we're going to do it the second Tuesday in June, which will be June 12th, Zemeckis Fest, Back to the Future on the big screen. So I just wanted to mention that. All right, Eric, tell us about Life of the Party.
Okay, well, this is the latest film with Melissa McCarthy. In the film, she plays a newly divorced divorcee. Her husband is leaving her for another woman, played by Julie Bowen. Husband is Matt Walsh from Veep. And to sort of, you know, reinvigorate her life, sort of, you know, what has she missed out on, she decides to enroll in college where her daughter is going. And so you got this scenario where, and then she finds kind of a kindred spirit in Gillian Jacobs, who plays a woman who was in a coma for 8 years and is now going back to college. So she got kind of a missed opportunity experience there as well. And it's just basically her, you know, hanging out with her daughter, embarrassing her from time to time, experiencing frat boys and mean girls, and having a pot trip along the way. And it's everything you would expect if Rodney Dangerfield's back to school was not particularly good.
See, that's what that's exactly what I was thinking. Like during this whole movie, was like I liked it so much better when Rodney did it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's a middle class basically back to school. And I mean, I remember when back when Gene Siskel reviewed Back to School, he said, you know, it might not be, you know, great, you know, having your parent there in school, but with Rodney there, at least it's more fun. Mm. And that's not what you get with Life of the Party. I mean, that's about as all the description of the plot that I really need to give about this film. Because I've been saying for a few weeks now, as I've been talking about the movies coming out this summer and whatnot, and so the box office stuff, is that there's basically now two types of Melissa McCarthy movies. There are the ones that she makes with Paul Feig, Bridesmaids, Spy, The Heat, Ghostbusters, and then there are the ones she makes with her husband, Ben Falcone. And that happens to be one of these movies. The other movies she's made with them are Tammy and The Boss, and no one would mistake those for anything on the Paul Feig list. And it's unfortunate. You know, I don't mean to make it, you know, personal like that. I mean, Ben Falcone has been funny on his own. He's just not a particularly good comedic director. He's actually quite bad at it, frankly. And this one is a little less bad than the other two, I suppose, because this one's at least trying to go for a little more heart. But, you know, by substituting a little extra heart, you're kind of substituting the opportunity for laughs or any kind of greater commentary with it. It just becomes this sort of kind of rote, boring, uninteresting comedy with, you know, the occasional chuckle here and there. A lot of wasted talent, like Gillian Jacobs, like Heidi Gardner in the film, which is really unfortunate. And it's also, you know, it kind of brings to light that not only are there two types of Melissa McCarthy movies, but there really have been kind of like two types of Melissa McCarthy characters in film and in television. There's, you know, the sort of the kind of sweet, kind of naive kind of character, and then there's the more kind of brazen, abrasive, foul-mouthed characters. It was one of the things I thought that Spy did so brilliantly, is that it started her off as one character and kind of turned her into the more confident version of the other. And even like, you know, like Saturday Night Live this weekend, where she popped up and did a cameo, I thought it was kind of a painfully unfunny bit playing Michael Che's sort of doting stepmom, where she was just kind of overly sweet and saccharine, and that was her whole shtick. And it's nothing compared to, obviously, the work she was doing as Sean Spicer on the show, which was much more in your face, much funnier. And this one is just, I mean, I'm forgetting it as I'm talking about it. And like you said, it's slightly less bad. I mean, I can't even say it's better. It's slightly less bad than Tammy or more The Boss, because Tammy is pretty atrocious. But this one, you know, there's much better Melissa McCarthy movies out there, and they're all made by Paul Feig.
Right. Eric, Colin, hang on, guys. We'll take a quick break, and I'll tell you what I thought of Life of the Party right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Right now, we're reviewing the new movies, and before the break, Eric told us about Melissa McCarthy's new movie, Life of the Party. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. I agree with virtually everything you said, Eric. This is as generic and dull a movie as you can get. You want to talk about a wasted cast? I mean, there's so many talented people in this movie, and they really don't do anything. And you can't. Why would you waste Gillian Jacobs? I don't understand. I mean,
yeah,
she's just the best. And so, you know, it has a couple of funny moments in it, I guess. But you know, it really was. I mean, I really couldn't get Back to School out of my mind. I was watching this movie, and I'm like, when's Kurt Vonnegut going to show up?
Because
it's not particularly clever, and you know, when it does pile on sort of the sweetness factor, it feels really, really forced. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the other two movies, The Boss and Tempe, they were both rated R, weren't they?
They were.
And they were sort of like, you know, much, well, not edgier, but they had more profanity in them and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case here. This is a PG-13. So even on that level, you know, some of the laughs are minimal because it's just like generic PG-13 situational comedy. Anyway, a good cast, Wasted. It's basically a very monotonous movie. This, you know, just a few laughs here and there. Melissa McCarthy is you know, like you said, there's the two types of Melissa McCarthy movies, and this is the bad type. But she does have an interesting looking movie coming out in the fall with her and Richard E. Grant.
The True Story. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that looks really good. Like, she looks like it's like, you know, I mean, it looks like, you know, like she's actually acting in it, you know, like giving a performance. But anyway, Ben Falcone is her husband. And again, he's been funny and stuff, as you said, but he's not a good comedic director. And they're just skating on this at all. Everybody, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Heidi Gardner. She is just the best on SNL.
She really is.
I mean, my God, you want to talk about having maybe the best first season ever? As a cast
that's
member,
a good point. I didn't think about that one.
I mean,
you brought that up.
Good Lord! And this, the bit that she just did on Saturday Night Live over the weekend at the teenage movie critic.
It was so funny and so like aggravating at the same time.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to just like knock her out.
Yeah.
You know, with like just something. It was just so painful to watch.
And the stuff that she's doing, the character stuff that she's doing on Update is great. I mean, but that and Angel the Boxer's
The Boxer's wife is one of my favorites.
It's one of the greatest things ever. And her character, you know, and the work that she's doing sketch wise. Also really, really strong and really funny. She's amazing, man. And I think she's clearly the big breakout star of this season.
Agreed.
So, and she's wasted in this movie. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, there it is. Now, we're not recommending Life of the Party, Melissa McCarthy's new comedy. All right. Colin.
Yep.
Let's talk about Revenge.
Yeah. Let's talk about Revenge. So this played at our film festival last week to a very enthusiastic audience, as I understand it. Matilda Anna Ingrid Lutz, as Matilda Lutz, according to looking at her IMDb page on here, plays Jen. And she is with her married lover, a guy named Richard. And they are at his secluded, you know, desert, you know, house in the desert. I'm not exactly sure where, but it's secluded. And he's on his, you know, hunting vacation. You know, his friends are about to join him. And you know, they eventually do. And they're not exactly on the same level as Richard. They don't have the same moral stature as he does. Well, one of them tries to force himself onto Jen. And eventually, you know, goes too far. And when Richard comes back, if I remember this correctly, I saw this a while ago, so if I get the setup wrong, let me know. But basically, she runs out of the house, and the three of them run after her, and basically push her off a cliff at one point, and they believe she's dead. But they have a mess to clean up. But they're still going to go on their hunting vacation. So they have to figure out, well, how are we going to clean this mess up, and now when are we going to go hunting, and blah, blah, blah. Well, she's not. And basically, we get into another sort of cat-and-mouse game like the kind I described before, only this one isn't boring and isn't PG-13 and isn't going through the usual motions.
Okay, hang on, Colin. We got a break here for the news, and we come back more right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hey, we're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We are here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Monday, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time on Monday mornings. And also, Monday morning movie reviews are continuing right now. Yesterday was Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to everybody, and we're going to talk about the best, the weird, the wildest, your favorite TV and movie moms. That's all coming up. 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Also, Eric and I will talk about the box office as well. But right now, we're in the middle of the movie reviews. And Colin, before the break, told us about a movie called Revenge. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Colin, continue. You're talking about this film, Revenge.
Yeah, I mean, story-wise, this isn't really anything new. We've seen this before. And, you know, and we've seen it done pretty savagely and pretty, you know, with a lot of the movies that are just merciless with this sort of thing. And this is no exception. But there's something about this one that is just sort of keeps you on the edge of your seat more than other movies like it. Partially because it's so, you know, stylized, but also just, well, you know, also kind of grounded as well. There's a, you know, it's directed by Coralie Farragut. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that last name correctly, but she's kind of, I think this is her debut feature. It is, I think. It's quite a debut. She also wrote it, and she's also the editor on it. And there's a real, like, skill here that is just, you know, we might be seeing the second coming of Kathryn Bigelow with this director, which is a pretty high compliment. And there are scenes in it that are pretty hard to watch, that are incredibly bloody. There's a tracking shot towards the end that is pretty amazing, that requires something of one of the male actors to be, you know, to sort of go the extra mile for it.
Yeah.
And like I said, story-wise, it's pretty standard fare, but the execution of it is fantastic. And, you know, this is, if you saw Breaking In or like, and you're like, well, that didn't have any meat on it, that didn't have any balls to it or anything like that, well, you might want to look at Revenge, because this was the kind of the opposite of Breaking In. This is that sort of vigilante thing done pretty well. And just, you know, for whatever recommendation this is worth, it was my girlfriend's second favorite film at our festival, and she saw a lot of stuff, so there's that. And so, yeah, I'm recommending it, too. It's pretty good.
Okay. Eric?
Oh, yeah. No, I saw this movie, caught up with it at Sundance this year. It was already on our radar to invite to the festival, and that only sealed it, because it is everything you want in a revenge tale like this. Colin was trying to figure out exactly where the film is, or where the film's set. I mean, it's secluded, that's all you really need to know. But it reminded me a lot of the those Australian exploitation films where women are kind of brutalized and hunted down by really horrific and sweaty men, and then she ends up turning the tables on them. Movies like Fair Game and things like that. And this one is just like, you know, it has shocks in it. It has the kind of great squirmy moments, particularly after she is pushed off that cliff. That just stuff is just like, how the hell is what? There's a lot of moments like that. Some really clever moments involving what she ends up doing to herself in the cave while she's preparing herself for battle. It has a great chase scene. A couple great chase scenes in the movies, one on foot and one involving cars. And it's just, I mean, it's fun. I mean, it is, you know, certainly, you know, any movie like this will be considered a movie for our time right now. But, you know, this one certainly is able to have that sort of that social commentary just by proxy to it, but it all at the same time is just a really kind of rip-roaring thriller that's a lot of fun and extraordinarily bloody. I mean, the blood that's let loose in this film is all over the place. That house at the end of the movie, I mean, my God. Yeah, not since The Shining has there been so much blood in a hallway. So, yeah, definitely recommend for this one.
Man, I loved it. Man, did I love this movie. A hell of a debut, directorial debut. I mean, huge. This woman is a force, man. And the Matilda Lutz is tremendous in it too. It's a really great performance. It's grounded, it's also physical, and boy, the stuff that she goes through in this movie is insane. Yeah, this is a, you know, it's a, I mean, obviously the title is just pretty much says it all. You know, like the title of the movie is exactly what the movie is about. but beautifully shot and, as you said, extraordinarily bloody. There were some things in this movie that I was just like, I mean, a lot during the course of the movie. But overall, it's exciting, and it is one of those it's one of those sort of rip-roaring takes on, you know, on obviously the title Revenge, in a way that is just exciting and I mean, it's just incredibly effective all the way through, you know, the setup leading to what happens to her, leading to, you know, her battling back. All of it works. It is a tremendous movie. I saw it on the VOD over the weekend. I watched it twice, actually, over the weekend, and I think it's great. It's not for everybody. Again, this is a very brutal movie. It's very, very bloody. You know, there's a rape scene in it, and there's okay. I mean, it's not. You know, this is hard R, rated R, and lots of blood, lots of violence. But it's great. So I loved it, and it's easily the best movie of this week. There's no question about it. So that's Revenge. It's in theaters, and it's also on VOD if you want to check it out. All right, so am I looking at this list correctly for next week? Do we actually have two movies with Saoirse Ronan in the same weekend?
We do, actually, yeah.
Oh, that's the greatest news ever. that's so good. And then we have Book Club, which just looks awful. That's Jane Fonda. Who else is in it? Candice Bergen,
Mary Steenburgen,
and Diane Keaton.
Yeah,
and they're a group of middle-aged women, older women, who read 50 Shades of Grey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Deadpool 2. That'll be the big. Now, is that going to that'll knock the Avengers off, right?
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got that, but The Seagull and On Chesil Beach are both Saoirse Ronan movies, and then that covers everything, right?
Yeah, pretty much. There's another Jim Carrey movie called Dark Crimes coming out.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That looks weird.
Yeah, and On Chesil Beach played our festival, as well as another film called Beast that's coming out next week. So two of our festival movies you get a chance to catch up with next week.
Okay, all right, so that's what's happening next week. Very cool. Colin, thank you, buddy.
Alrighty.
And we will talk to you next week. Eric, you're going to hang out, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, Eric, hold on a second. When we come back, we'll talk box office with Eric Childress right here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And, yeah, we are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning, and we just reviewed all the new movies. And now we're going to talk about the box office. Eric Childress writes about the box office, and you can read it at movies.com. Welcome back, Eric.
Hello.
Okay, are you ready to talk about the box office here?
Yeah.
Avengers, Infinity War, 61.8 million, bringing its total up to 547.8 million. And that's just in America.
That's just in America. In 3 weeks, now thanks to a record-breaking, close to record-breaking number in China this weekend, the film is now the fifth all-time worldwide champion.
Wow.
$1.6 billion. It is now the highest-grossing Marvel film of all time. This week, by next weekend, it'll pass Jurassic World for fourth. And then the only thing ahead of it are the three films that have made over $2 billion worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Those are mm-hmm. that's incredible. That's incredible money right there.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that it might still not beat Black Panther here in the States.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, Black Panther is approaching, and we can get to that in a second, but it's approaching $700 million worldwide. I mean, just in America, and it's over $1.3 billion internationally. So it's already passed it there, but you know, you got Deadpool and Solo over the next 2 weeks,
right?
And it's really going to cut into that gross here. So I think, you know, you're probably looking at right now probably somewhere around 650, maybe a little bit more. It's just funny that Black Panther is going to beat it here just thanks to that sort of landing strip of very little competition that it had when it opened.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, the third week for this movie to make 61 million, almost 62 million, that's really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, again, you get the no competition factor. I mean, look at the movies we reviewed this week, Life of the Party and Breaking In.
Right.
And, you know, so they're only dropping 46% this week, which is a pretty solid third-week drop from a movie that made over 115 million last week, 118 million, something like that.
Yeah.
That's a very, very good drop.
Wow. Okay. And then number two was Life of the Party, 18.5 million. That's Melissa McCarthy. How's that in comparison to her other movies?
Actually, like her weakest opening. Frankly, I mean, of all of the movies that she's kind of starred or been the kind of a co-starring, main co-starring role in, it's less than any of the Paul Feig films, and it's lesser than both Tammy and The Boss. Mm. Open to both of those open to over $20 million. So, and this one, you know, this one even opened less than Snatch did last year, the Mother's Day offering with Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn.
So wow, it made less than that.
It made less than that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that one made 19.5 million.
Wow. Okay. All right. And obviously, the people that saw it this week are the people that are going to see it. And I mean, I don't.
Pretty much. I can't imagine there's going to be a lot of turnover for that one.
Yeah. Okay. Number three, Breaking In, 16.5 million. That's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all, actually. I mean, it's a $6 million film. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, a movie, a Gabriel Union thriller, you know, making that much. Again, it'll probably die off pretty quickly as well. But, you know, go see Revenge. I mean,
yeah.
that's the lesson from this week's show.
Yeah. Number four. Eric, have you seen Overboard?
No.
Oh.
No.
10.1 million. It's I personally think it's unwatchable. I mean, I just thought it was awful.
And, yeah, and I can't get past the trailers for it.
No, it's just so bad. And you know, and I really like Anna Faris. It's just depressing to watch this movie. It was so bad. Overboard, 10 million, 29.5 million. That's not doing well, right?
It's not, I mean, not huge numbers, but for what it cost and who it stars,
yeah.
It's not bad. It might, you know, turn a profit. I mean, the drop this week was only 31%, which is a lot better than the drop last year with How to Be a Latin Lover, which also was a cheap movie that made a good profit because of Derbez's fans.
Yeah,
I guess. And yeah.
All right. Number five, continuing in the top five here, A Quiet Place, 6.4 million, bringing its total up to about 170 million.
One of the true success, there's Black Panther, and then there's this.
Mm-hmm.
These are the success stories of the year so far. 169 million just in the States. It's probably, you know, it's headed for, you know, somewhere over probably 185 million, which is what we've been talking about for several weeks now, and another 100 million internationally. Not bad for a movie that cost $17 million to make.
Yeah. And it's so good.
It is.
It's just so good.
It's so good.
Number six, I Feel Pretty, 3.7 million, 43.8. Amy Schumer not making the money that she was hoping to make.
No, not really. I mean, the best thing that can be said about this movie is that it's going to make more than Snatched did last year.
Okay.
But that's about it.
All right. Number seven, Rampage, 3.3 million.
Yeah. I mean, so it's not going to cross 100 million here in the U.S. Most likely it won't. It's probably going to come up just short of that. But a huge international hit. It's pulled in over 300 million internationally. So you're looking at nearly 400 million worldwide. So
wow.
This turned into a hit.
Yeah, of course. You know why? Because The Rock's in it.
Right.
That's it. Okay. Well, obviously next week the big one's going to be Deadpool. Deadpool 2.
Deadpool 2, I think, is going to be taking its first leap to becoming the biggest R-rated release of all time.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. And we'll review that and a bunch of other movies as well. And congratulations on the success of the Chicago Critics Film Festival, Eric. I know you put a lot of hard work into it, so congrats.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate
it. All right, buddy. Take care. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, there's Eric Childress, everybody. You can check him out at movies.com, and he is with us every week talking about the new movies along with Colin, and then we talk about box office, and we'll do it again next week. All right, we're going to take a quick break here on 720 WGN.